A couple of weeks ago, I was reading in the book of Hebrews, and there's a passage of scripture in Hebrews chapter 12 that says this, that God is, that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Anybody ever heard that before? And what I want you to hear and what you just saw is this. I've watched as Christians, oftentimes we have a tendency to live in one of those three spheres and not all three. Let me explain what I mean by that. I have a friend of mine who, every time I talk to him, he talks about how God moved in his life and he got to see life change happen 20 years ago in a ministry that he was a part of. And he's always talking about how he saw people find Christ and all those kind of things. And I recently challenged him. I said, have you seen, is Jesus still moving today? And he said this to me, I believe he probably is somewhere. And for some of us as Christians, we have a tendency to see Jesus as a past tense. I saw him in my life here in 1978. I saw him in my life in 2003. I saw him in my life in 2015. I saw him in my life back here. But if I were to ask you right now in this room, is Jesus alive and well? Is he moving in your life? Do you see him moving around? You may say, well, I don't necessarily see him these days. I haven't seen him make any difference. I haven't seen him make difference in my friends, and my family, and my world. And for some of us, we've lost a number of people who we're close to, and so our world is only about the future. And so you go, Jesus is the same in the future, and I can't wait till the day comes that I see my loved ones and my lost ones and all my friends who over the years knew Jesus, and I will get to spend eternity with them. And my question to you, if you're a Christian, is this. Do you see Jesus only in the future tense? Do you see Jesus only in the past tense? Or do you see Jesus moving here and now? And what you just saw in the course of 2018 is only a beginning of the fact that Jesus Christ continues to move in our community, and he continues to move in Howard County, and he continues to move in Tipton County, and Cass County, and Miami County, and Carroll County, and Clinton County and Grant County, and he is creating a movement that's happening here and now, and not a movement that occurred 5 years ago or 10 years ago, and not a movement that one day will be fulfilled in the future, but that Jesus Christ is alive, and he's alive right now inside of this community. And so I want you, as you sit, we celebrate this kind of thing, I want you to see this. And today, what I want to do is I want to celebrate this idea and this understanding, because a few months ago, as a staff, we were having this conversation. And the conversation began because we began to ask a question, who are the people in our community who do not attend any church anywhere? And some of you are here because you didn't attend a church and somebody invited you here to be a part of it. And so who are those people? And is there any of them out there that exist? Because a lot of us in the room have this understanding that, well, everybody in the Midwest has had a relationship or an opportunity to have a relationship with Jesus. And so the idea is this. If they once knew Jesus or they once had an opportunity, they've all been asked 100 times and they've either said yes or they've said no. And so that's a group of people that stands there. And you need to know that a group of people in our community who do not attend a church anywhere isn't a group that's decreasing. It's actually a group that in some counties surrounding Howard County, it's increasing at the rate of 10% or greater every 10 years. And so for us, we began to ask the question, where you're sitting right now, we drew a 20-minute drive circle around where you're sitting and around our North Kokomo campus, and we asked this question, who does not attend a church anywhere? And this is what we found out, that there are 57,000 people who do not attend a church anywhere within 20 minutes of where you sit. And the question is, why would we even care about this? Because there's some of us even in here that are more interested in us taking care of ourselves and let's make sure we keep people happy and do the things here. And what I've recognized is this, is that within that 20-minute circle, there are 400 churches in our community. And a majority of those 400 churches are not concerned about the people who are not attending church. Some people living even next door to those folks. Jesus would address this conversation. If you have a Bible, open it up to Luke, the 15th chapter. because I love how Jesus talks about this. If you have a Bible app, you can open it up to Luke chapter 15. And I just want to read, there's three stories that Jesus tells. And you need to know these three stories impacted my life several years ago. And I'll explain to you in just a minute of how the impact happened and even how that impact occurs today in some of the things that you're seeing around you. But this story, the first story that Jesus tells, it begins this way. Tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. This is the riffraff, right? These are the people that nobody likes. And they're like, what the heck are these guys showing up at church? Why are they listening to Jesus, right? And it says this. This made the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law complain that he was associating with such sinful people. The people who were religious were the ones who were struggling with Jesus because here's a guy who seemed to have some integrity. Here's a guy who seemed to be a decent fella to hang out with. Here's a guy who seemed to be able to line up with some of their values. And yet, why in the world would this guy hang out with people that nobody else wants to hang out with? And even worse, eat with them. Why would he want to share with them? You have to understand, in Eastern thinking, the idea is this, is that if you want to go to somebody's house, you don't drop hints like you and I do, right? You know, where you hang outside the door long enough and they invite you in. That doesn't happen in the Eastern thinking. In Eastern thinking, while it may seem rude to you, Eastern thinking, you invite yourself into their world. You say, I would love to come to your house tonight for dinner. And that is an honor to people all throughout Eastern thinking. And because of that, because of inviting yourself into their home, they look at it and say, wow, he associates with us. Now, most of us in the room would say, that's kind of rude. If somebody walked up to you and said, you know, hey, I'm coming over to your house for dinner, you'd say, no, you're not. You know, I didn't invite you over and the ribs are only for my family, not yours, right? So there's a little bit of a difference in thinking here. But this is why we would say, this is why the writer would say, Jesus would even eat with these guys. He's sitting down and eating with people that if you ate with them, your Christian friends would say, they're walking away from Jesus. So Jesus sees this happening. And he tells a set of three stories. And today I just want to focus on the first story. Because this story rocked my world in some really big ways a few years ago. This is what he says. He says, if a man has 100 sheep, these are Jesus' words, and one of them gets lost, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go to search for the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he's found it, he'll joyfully carry it home on his shoulders. And when he arrives, he'll call together his friends. He'll call together his neighbors. And he will say, rejoice with me. I found my lost sheep. And then Jesus gives commentary to this. He says, in the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and have never strayed away. Now you have to understand that as Jesus makes this claim and as he begins to take this story and he unpacks the story for hundreds of people who would be righteous, for hundreds of people who would say, we're good Jewish people and everybody knows that we're good Jewish people, they would be saying, wait a minute, time out. This doesn't seem to make sense. Because God is a God of justice, and God wants to come down and rain down on those who are unrighteous. God wants those people. We've created our whole system. We've created our whole world to make sure that we are right and they are wrong. And Jesus destroys that kind of thinking in one particular story. Let me give you a personal illustration of this. 15 years ago, I was living outside of the state of Indiana. I was pastoring a church and watching God do some amazing things. And while there had been times in my life that I had thought about returning to Indiana to do ministry, I immediately would say, no way, and I'll tell you why, because it's the same thought that some of you have even sitting in the room today. And it was this. Why would somebody need to hear the gospel two times when there are people in the United States who've never heard it once? And some of us have a belief, I did, that those 57,000, somebody talked to them somewhere along the way. Somebody said, hey, won't you come to Jesus? And they just said no. And so it became an assumption that I had. I grew up here. I didn't live very far from where we're standing right now. And this was my whole life and my whole world was surrounded by Howard County and Miami County and Grant County. I lived in North Central Indiana. And the thing was, when I left North Central Indiana, I left with an understanding that everybody who was a Christian said yes to Jesus, and those who were not a Christian had already said no to Jesus. And the truth of the matter is, everybody's been asked once, and so quite honestly, I need to go find some place where people had never been asked. And so I ended up in a place called Las Vegas. And quite honestly, I met a lot of people there that had never been asked about Jesus, and I watched God move in some tremendous ways. And 15 years ago, I had an opportunity to take some time off from work. It was called a sabbatical, a religious opportunity for me to be able to rest. And so I came back, and I decided to move in with my mom and dad. Can you imagine a 35-year-old man moving in with his parents and for 90 days being single? What an opportunity and a joy for them, right? Well, one evening, we were sitting around the house and we were thinking, maybe we'd like to have dinner tonight. And so we were saying, what would you like? And somebody said, well, you know, I'd like steak. And they said, you know what? We can get to the Texas Roadhouse before 6. It's a lot cheaper. Right? Some of you are laughing because you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so we showed up at Texas Roadhouse like most of you in the room have done at 5:57, right? And then you ask the person, are we under the 6 o'clock? And they're like, yes, woo, good. I get to have my roadkill for $8.99 instead of $14.99, right? And so we go and we sit down and we have this incredible meal as my mom and dad and me, and we're sitting there having this meal. At the end of the meal, I excuse myself and say, I need to go to the restroom. And so I go to the restroom and do my business, and I'm over and I'm washing my hands, and in walks another man. Now, ladies, I want to pause here because here's the deal. You love to go to the restroom in groves. You call your friends on the phone and say, hey, I'm getting ready to go to the restroom. What are you doing in the next 20 minutes? Can you drive over here and go to the restroom with me? And I don't, maybe share beauty tips or figure things. I don't know how you do that, ladies, but you love to be in the restroom. Guys, no. If I'm sitting at a table with another couple and a guy looks across the table and says, how about you and me go to the restroom? I'm thinking to myself, we're done with this meal, right? Guys, you know what I'm saying, correct? And so here's the deal. I'm washing my hands and in walks another guy. And here's what we do, ladies, just so that you're aware, we're not rude. We do this. Hey, and then you look away, right? That's exactly what guys do in the restroom. When somebody else walks in, hey, you got to be at least kind. You're like, hey, you know, you do your thing. I'll go my way. And I'm sitting there washing my hands. I do, hey, and the guy, hey, and he goes back. And then here's the thing. While I'm washing my hands, I'm hearing this guy weeping at the urinal. And so I'm drying my hands. He comes over, and literally his face is covered with tears, and he is extremely emotionally distraught. And I'm thinking, I need to get out of here as soon as I possibly can. But God had other plans. And I looked over at this guy and I said, you okay? And he said, I'm not. He said, my entire family is sitting around a table out there and they think that I've called them together because I'm going to announce my retirement. And instead, my doctor just told me I have 6 months left to live. And so I kind of put my hand on the guy's shoulder and I said to him, it's moments like this that at least we have our faith to rely on. Because you are making the same assumption that I made. Everybody knows Jesus in this town. And what he said to me is the shocker that ultimately led me back to Crossroads Community Church to be in your pastor. He said to me, what are you talking about? And I said to him, you know, I mean, you got Jesus, I mean, then your life. And the guy gave me this deer in the headlight look. He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I realized that there is a person who is not less than 3 miles from where you're sitting right now, who was eating at a restaurant, who had absolutely no idea that Jesus Christ died for him, that had no idea that Jesus Christ rose from the dead to be his Savior, that had no idea that he had an opportunity for eternity. And the one biggest thing is that this guy didn't know that there was hope in a hopeless situation. And over the next 10 minutes, I shared with him who Jesus was and the love that Christ had. And I shared with him the importance of hope and what does hope look like and how does hope work in the course of our lives and how Jesus is our hope and the importance of that. And then I said to him, would you love to have Jesus in your life? Would you love to have Jesus come into your heart? And the guy said, absolutely, I would love that. And so I put my hands on his shoulders. He put his hands on my shoulders and I said, let's pray together. And just as I said that, another man walked into the men's restroom as I'm embracing another man. So what did we do? We both turned and went, sup, you know, kind of thing. Kind of, right? Got to give him the greeting there. And I prayed for this guy to find Christ. And I prayed with him, and he made the prayer to accept Christ in that moment. And then we exited out of the restroom, and I came back and sat down with my family, and they did what my family oftentimes do. Where have you been? Right? What have you been doing? And I said to them, my mom and dad, I said, you know, I just led a guy to Christ in the bathroom. And they're like, I've heard lots of excuses, and that's never come up before. Right? Even as we were exiting the restaurant, we're walking out, and this guy sees me from across the way, and he says, you, come here, come here. And I go to a table of 12, 14 people, and they're all crying, weeping uncontrollably, and this guy's going, tell them what you told me in the bathroom. You see, I realized something in that day. I realized, and God changed something in me, that there are people who live very close to us. There are people who are our neighbors, and you love the fact that they're your neighbors, because when you go somewhere, they mow your lawn, and whenever you're gone, you mow their lawn, and so back and forth. And there's people who are close to us that we share lockers next door to at school. There are people that we work beside day after day, year after year. There are family members that we see all the time, and the problem is you and I have come to a place of an understanding where so many of us just say, I'm sure somebody talked to them. I'm sure they have some friend. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's done this. And surely somebody else can be the one who shares with them the good news of Jesus. And these folks don't get the celebration. And there are 57,000 of them in our community that are the one that Jesus described in his story. Hear that, church. Now, let me clarify something here, because now the thing for some of us is this, and for some of you, you know exactly who I'm talking about. So write that down. You've got a blank there that's in front of you. Write down the name. But before we're done, I'm going to ask you to write down a name. So either do it now or you can wait until later to do it. But let me define the one. Let me define who is the one, because I think as Christians, we have a wrong definition at times of who the one is. And there are three ways that we rightly or wrongly describe who that one person is. The first way is this. It's kind of a wrong way. It's called sheep swappers. Let me explain what I mean by this. Sheep swappers is a term that simply means this. These are people who are connected to a church somewhere. They've given their life to Christ, and you're having a conversation with them one day, and they're like, why are you so happy? And they're like, man, because I just had this awesome sermon yesterday, and worship was rocking at my church. And this person says, you know, I've been going to this church for 25 years, and the last time anything moved was when we had a leak in the roof, and we had to move a bucket to make sure that the leak was taken care of. And you go, oh, then you're missing out. You ought to come and join us at Crossroads. And hundreds of you have found Crossroads because somebody was nice enough to invite you to come and be a part of it. But here's what I want you to know. If you're one of those people and you go, I used to go to church here, and now I go to church here, and this is where I go is Crossroads, I'm glad as your pastor that you chose to join us And I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you're inviting other people, but can I just be honest with you? That is not the one. And I have this problem that I invite somebody and they come to church with me, and then I feel inside of me, I've done my evangelistic duty because I brought somebody from this church to this church. And I recognize that there are a lot of churches out there that aren't reaching people, and they're dead, and we're alive and well, and God's doing great things. Look around the room, it seems to fill up a lot. And so what do we do in these moments and in these cases? It's a great thing to bring other people with us and invite them in, but please, please, please do not call this evangelism. If you're talking to a friend that's a Christian and they're coming here, we're grateful that you're here. And if today, if you're going, man, we were at this church and it's kind of dying off, so we came here today, we're glad you're here. But if you are a Christian, this is not, you're not the one that we're talking about. The one that we're talking about is in two big categories. And the first category is this. Write this down. They're the de-churched. I found out that there's a lot of people who fit into this category. Perhaps some of you, when you were a kid, remember that your family wasn't really a churched family. And so grandma used to say, you're going to go to church with me. And so she would wake you up and she would make sure that you came. And there was a point in your life where you thought, someday I cannot wait to not go to church anymore because I wake up and I have to come with grandma every single week. And there are people who were de-churched because they got to a place where they were at a church and they just dropped out. They got old enough and they said, I don't need to come anymore. I don't need to be a part of it. And so they are de-churched. There's another component of this group of people. There are people like me as pastors that we've made mistakes and we've said stupid things. And there are people in churches who've done stupid things. And there are people now who used to go to a church and they no longer go to a church because quite honestly, the deal for them is they don't see the need for it. And they just say, you know what? I used to go to first church of blah, blah, blah. Or I used to go to second church of this or whatever it is. And the problem is I don't go anymore because all they ever did was this. It was filled with hypocrites or these are the cases, and everybody has their list of stuff. And here's what I've learned is that a big number of the 57,000 people are folks who used to attend a church somewhere, and whether they know about the experience, they've had it with one church and they feel like that's the way all churches are and they've never experienced another opportunity, and you know these people, they're all around you all the time. And here's what you do. You just kind of think, hey, I know they used to do church, but they don't anymore, so I'm not going to talk to them, or I'm not going to talk to them about church. But this is part of 57,000 people in our community that said, I don't relate to any type of religious background. Now, can I just pause for a moment and tell you that this 57,000 does not include people who have religions that you probably disagree with, people who are Muslims, people who are Buddhists, people who are Hindus, people who are part of religions that you say Jesus, that we would say Jesus isn't the way for them. That doesn't count this number. These are just people who every day don't do a church. You drive by their house on your way to here on Sundays, and you know it. You pull out of your driveway, and while you're great friends and you love to help each other out and you get each other's mail, you know week after week after week they watch you drive out of the driveway, come to church, and then you drive back in, but you never have this conversation. There's a second group beside de-churched, and that is the unchurched. These are people in our community who don't know anything about church. I meet these people a lot. These are people who are can sometimes be great neighbors. They just have no need for church. There's no reason for them to go to church. A few weeks ago, we had one of our baptisms was a young person, and I got to meet the parents and talk to the parents of this young person, and I said, hey, where do you guys usually go to church? And they go, we've never gone to church. It's just not really our thing. We don't do church. And I said, well, how did your daughter connect? And they said, because she was invited by her friend, and they started to connect here, and they got together in group, and they served together here, and they did all kinds of things, and we just thought, okay. And these folks began to come to Crossroads, not because the church was the thing to do. It was just because we never did this before. for, completely unchurched individuals who live in our community. These could be quality friends and family members. These are also people who are desperately trying to fill a God-shaped hole with something. These are the folks that are really awesome people, and you would say, they're good people. I love these people. I'm glad they're our neighbors. I'm glad he works with me. I'm glad that they're a part of this. But then there's the other side, and many of us consider these the folks that are the 57,000. Those are the ones who have some kind of an addiction, and they make poor choice after poor choice, and they tend to go from addiction to addiction. There was a theological band called AC/DC. Some of you can remember. Come on, people. Stay with me here. Anybody here ever heard of AC/DC? Seven of you? Okay, good, 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 good. They had that great theological song, I'm on a highway to hell. Do you remember that one? Okay, for those of you who don't, I will sing part of that song for you at this moment. I'm on a highway to hell. Okay, remember that? There you go. Okay, that's some of you right now are trying to forget those days. You're like, oh my gosh, that's that, oh my goodness. But you and I both know that there are individuals in our community that just say this: I will fill a hole in my heart with anything I can fill it with. And the thing about it is this: these are folks who fall into the unchurched category. And James, the brother of Jesus, would say this about bringing people who are de-churched or unchurched back into a relationship with Christ. This is how James closes out his book in James 5. Brothers and sisters, if someone among you wanders away from the truth and is brought back, you can be sure that whoever brings the sinner back from wandering will save that person from death and bring about the forgiveness of many sins. And what an awesome, awesome opportunity. Now, here's what I want us to do is I'm going to give you three words to write down for the rest of the service. But before I do that, I want you to see a story of two people inside of our church who took that number of 57,000 and made it 56,998 because of a third person who invited them to come. Let's watch the story of Eric and Lori Myers together.
I struggled with alcohol for somewhere around 40 years. I was introduced to it young. It was acceptable in my family. Everybody drank, so, you know, it was just kind of the norm. As far as going to church or anything, I never really did. Basically just quit going and never stepped foot back into a church until my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, met Heidi at work.
He was struggling pretty bad with his alcoholism, pretty much our whole relationship. And I look back now and I don't know how I survived it all, but I did. And he was in detox last February. For the last time in detox. And we had been split up for a couple weeks before that. And when he got to detox, he wanted to come home after that. And I said, well, you know, I think maybe we should check out some churches. I mean, we've tried everything else and nothing, absolutely nothing worked. And so I went to work, and Heidi and I had become friends. We talked about checking out some churches, and she said, well, what church were you thinking about starting at? And I said, I think Crossroads, and I don't even know why Crossroads popped in my head. It's just the first church that came out of my mouth. And she said, well, I've been going there for a while. If you want, I'll go with you guys.
Last year, she had a really hard place, and she had been there for me through a lot of hard times too. So I actually went with her to an Al-Anon meeting, and I knew from our conversations at work that God really wasn't a part of her life. And but at the Al-Anon meeting, they talked about God, and I saw Lori actually like open up just a little bit, you know, just a little, open that door, and so when she talked about maybe going to church, I thought maybe if I went with them. And I told her how great the breakfast was, and I would get her breakfast and the cheesy potatoes.
You
I remember
did
I told
buy
her
us breakfast that I first did. Time.
I promised her some really good cheesy potatoes. I said, if anything, you'll love the music and you'll love the breakfast. So that's what we did.
We liked it. We really did. And we walked out to the car and we got in the car and we both just kind of stared straight ahead until I think we got out on the highway. And I finally looked at him and I said, do you feel like he was talking to us? And he said, yeah. And I said, did somebody call him and tell him we were coming?
Yeah, it definitely seemed, and that just seemed to be the weekly thing, you know. It was like every time we showed up, the message that was being delivered was somehow part of our life, you know. And we just, you know, we left here, we were happy, you know, even though we had all these problems, my problem interfering with our lives and everything like that, you know. We'd go out of here just good in spirit, you know.
We felt forward to the next week.
And you know, we'd make plans to be here a little bit earlier, you know, and we felt compelled to just be back and you know, get involved in everything, you know,
So this last year though, it's been amazing. It's been amazing to see all the miracles that God's, you know, and all the mountains that God has moved to help Eric. And
big mountains.
And, you know, they say that I've been a blessing to them, but I think they've been a bigger blessing to me. And they've helped me grow in my faith. And I just really appreciate them. I love having them here.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we would have, but I'm not convinced that we would have come back that second time if it weren't for having Heidi meet us here. I think it's changed all of us.
I think so, too.
I think it really has. It has changed all of us.
Three Musketeers.
What an awesome story. Last week, it was incredible. The last service, it was incredible because Heidi and Eric and Laurie, all three, were sitting right over here. And for you to know this, Eric's story's not over. His story's not over. Eric can tell you that for the first time last year in his life, in the last year, he has been sober more days than he hasn't. And here's the problem is that the struggle continues to be real, as it is for so many of you in the room, as it is for me. And we tell the story because what I love about this story is, number one, it's a person whose story continues to be developed. I love that. But the second thing is, I love what Heidi did. And I would love for every single one of you to do what Heidi did. What you heard her do in this story, I pray the same thing would happen to you. The three things that Heidi did that I love and I would encourage you to do is this. Number one, pray for this person. We're going to give you a chance as we end this service for you to pray for this individual in your life. If you're thinking every person I know is a Christian, then you need to expand your circle, because this 57,000 is greater than the number of people who will attend a church this weekend anywhere in the counties that I mentioned. The truth is, these people are everywhere we go. They're all over the place. We see them all the time in places that you go, like supermarkets, like drugstores. They are everywhere. You work beside them. You live beside them. And the problem is, for so many of us, we've never named an individual and said, God, give me a chance to bring this person into a relationship with you. Boy, it changed Heidi's life in some pretty cool ways. And my encouragement to you is that you would pray about this. God would say this in the book of Isaiah. He would say this statement, listen, the Lord's arm is not too weak to save you, nor is his ear too deaf to hear you call. So who is the name that you're calling out? Every one of us have a name. I've got somebody, and I pray that you too would have someone. The second thing that we see, first off, is pray. Turn to your neighbor and say, pray. Second one, turn to your neighbor and say, invest. Invest. Did you hear what Heidi said in the video? I hope you're listening. So I went to an Al-Anon meeting with my friend Laurie. That's an investment. You see where Heidi's story and her story began to come. You see, some of us in the room think that this investment is me walking up to them, tossing a tract in their face and saying, here, read this, and then let me know what your decision is. That's not the case. The truth is, the investment piece is you taking the time and taking the opportunity to pause and to say, hey, you're my friend, I love you, I care for you, and I would love for us to walk through this journey together. In the book of Revelation, the 12th chapter, there's this enormous battle, and in the end, we're starting to see where Jesus and his armies are winning, and Satan and his armies are losing. And in this, there's these phrases that are brought, and Revelation 12:11 puts it this way: they have defeated him by the blood of the Lamb and by their testimony. Hear that, everyone. Because I want you to understand that yes, it is Jesus Christ who does the saving, but every single one of us has a story. And one of the biggest problems when we talk about people who aren't in church is that most of us never want to tell them our story. And here's the reason, because we're afraid that they're going to begin to counteract it or do something with it. You need to know it is your story. And you love to hear great stories. You love to hear stories like Eric and Laurie's, and you love to hear stories from your friends and your family. Then why is it that the greatest relationship in your life, you're not willing to tell the people who are closest in the world of the story that God's doing in your world? This is why I say that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Because my prayer is that you know that your story with Christ isn't one that was written 25 years ago. It's not a story that was written 10 years ago. It's a story that continually gets written today and over and over and over again. That God wants to take your story and do something amazing with your story. And some of you in the room are going, Pastor, you don't understand my story. I grew up in a church, and then I had a couple of times that I knew God was real. I saw him in real cool moments, but that's my story. I never really did anything wrong. Sometimes you tell stories about people that are way out there. And I want you to know this. Your story will impact the people who are closest to you in your world. They want to hear it. And so invest in them. The third word, so turn to your neighbor and say invest. Pray, invest, and here's the third one. It's an invitation. Give them an invitation. Give them an opportunity to be invited. Now, here's what I'd like for you to do. When you came in, you were handed a little tiny business card. Pull this out if you would. Some of you might want more of these. That's fine. We got tons of these back there. That's great. But if you'll notice on the back of this, there's a phrase that says, there's hope. I love the fact that my mom, who's here today, she works at our North Kokomo campus on Tuesday afternoons. And for you to know that one of the greatest things that have been an encouragement to us is that our North Kokomo office is right on the square here in Howard County in downtown Kokomo. And it was placed there by divine providence, even though we're renting the facility there. But the reason is because where we are placed, when people walk out of the courthouse with whatever decisions were made before on their behalf or against them, what ends up happening in that moment is they come out and the first thing they see is this sign that's right here on the backside of this card. There's hope. And we cannot tell you, my mom can, of people that literally we don't know at all and have no relationship with, who literally walk out of the courthouse and the first sign they see is there's hope. And they walk straight into our North Kokomo office and they say, okay, what's the catch? Because I just got convicted. I just had to pay somebody a lot of money. I just got divorced. I just had this happen. So where's the hope? You know, you watched the video a few minutes ago of 190 people is what we averaged in 2018. You know, because you haven't been here, that over the last 4 weeks, the weather's been horrible. You know what we've averaged at our North Campus in the last 4 weeks with horrible weather? 230 people. We jumped 40 people even in the worst weather of the year. It's incredible. Folks, God's doing some amazing things. Today, while you're in this service, they're doing baptisms. They have 9 baptisms on track for today. Celebrate Recovery was something that we started. We were told by people who are experts in this that in order for you to get started, it takes a year. We decided to do it in 6 weeks. And then they said, after you get started and it gets going, plan on a maximum amount of people of 35. You need to know that since the first week, there's only been 1 week we've been below 100 individuals who have come through Celebrate Recovery. And that week happened to be Thanksgiving night. 93 people knew that this was their hope for recovery. Folks, this is such an incredible thing that God's doing in our midst, and such an incredible thing that we're seeing life change happen. Just this past week, somebody dropped off at our North Kokomo office 100 sets because of the cold temperatures, 100 sets of hats, 100 sets of gloves, and 100 sets of scarves. And it was a local business in our community, a corporate business in our community. And the reason they did it is they said, when we see people who are coming in, who are overcoming their addictions, we said, who in our community is at the forefront of doing this? And almost every one of them said Crossroads Community Church. And so they showed up at our church for us to hand out these scarves and gloves and hats so that people could stay warm. Gang, this is a movement of God that's happening, and it's happening in a real way, and you are at the centerpiece of this movement of God. And so this idea of invitation is to be able to make this happen. Jesus would put it this way, and he said it very clearly. He said, go, make disciples. That's the invitation. And the point is this, card that you're handing out right now, for you to be able to take the one person, and we'll let you know when a great week for you to be able to invite them, and you bring them and say, hey, I'd love for you to come join me. We can, here at the South Campus, have cheesy potatoes. We can meet at this door. I can walk you through and show you how to check your kids in. We can walk through this. I'll sit by you in service. Gang, this is an incredible movement of God that's happening in our community. Jesus is the same yesterday, but Jesus is the same today, and he's making a difference in hundreds of lives of people in our community. I love the fact that we get this privilege. And so in the next few months, there's two things that come as a part of this. We're here to help. And how are we going to help you with this? Two things. The first one simply is this. We're going to have special times this year that we're going to pray, and we're going to say, here's the deal. We're going to pray for our lost friends. We're going to take time in our service to pray for our lost friends. We're going to do a summer series on what it means to invest in them. How does that look? How do you write a testimony? What does that look like? And then we'll let you know of specific weekends like Easter and Christmas and other weekends that we'll have the privilege of you inviting your unchurched friends or your dechurched friends and being able to say, come and join me. Be a part of what's happening at Crossroads Church so that you can join in and be a part of this. The second thing that we're going to do is this, is that we're adjusting our resources to make it as easy as we can for you to get your friend to church. In our North Kokomo campus, you already heard me talk about some of the things that are happening there. Because of it, today, and what we've seen already happening most of the weekend since the new year, there is standing room only in the room that we're renting at North Kokomo. If you show up there, and some of you have, you've been told, hey, if you're a regular church person, you get to stand in the back, and we're going to let these new people come. Here's what we found out. We opened up our North Kokomo campus. 130 of you somewhere in that area said, yes, I'll go to the North Kokomo and I'll help them get started. 75 of you have come back, and we have found over 200 new people who have no idea what Crossroads South Kokomo looks like. Last year, for the history of Crossroads Community Church, for the first time in our history, 25% of the population who attend Crossroads Community Church are not sitting inside this room. God's doing something amazing in our church, and we want you to be a part of it. Did you know this card that I'm holding up, that our friend Kevin Sprinkle at the North Kokomo campus is handing this card to his friends, and you know what he's telling them? Hang on to this card and start praying, but don't invite anyone because we have no seats for you. Think about that. We're out of seats. So here's what we're doing. We got to add a second service there as soon as we possibly can. We're already getting ready to do that. We're trying to figure out what does it look like for a permanent location, because we've seen the growth happening, and we've got to find a spot somewhere in downtown Kokomo that can house as many as 300 or 400 people because of the growth curve that God's doing in the course of this ministry. And so we've been praying through this. We've been looking at sites. We've been talking, saying, okay, with realtors and other folks around us, and how do we figure this out? And hopefully we'll have something in the coming weeks or months to be able to share in the course of this. And we'll be talking about the second thing. So what's happening here? Because you're a part of our South Kokomo campus. And so there are some things that are happening here in South Kokomo. If you look around the room, you'll see that there are a few more people that are coming. But this is the thing. We want to make sure that we provide as many opportunities for people to come. And when we've asked unchurched and dechurched people, if you came to church, when would you come? More times than not, we have heard, I would come on a Sunday morning. And so we want to make as many offerings as possible. So starting in August, we see that we're going to have three services on Sunday morning. There will be three of these services that will happen on Sunday morning. Why? Because we want to give as many options for people as possible to be able to come and be a part of our service. The other thing is that we're going to shift our Saturday nights after Easter. Our Saturday nights are going to shift away from this building, and we're going to do what we believe Crossroads does best, and that is to be in our community. We've already had a business in our community that we've approached, and they said, I would love for Crossroads to show its service in our business. So when people walk in to be able to frequent our business, somebody from Crossroads would be there, and there'd be people in there to be able to encourage them to find Christ. And we believe that these micro sites is really an opportunity for us to be able to reach as many people as we possibly can. Guys, this is an incredible movement of God. And here's the thing. It isn't about just a number. It is about the one person that you wrote down on a piece of paper that is your one. 2 weeks ago, I took my kid to the YMCA to go swimming. And I did what some of you do. I sat there, I dressed up in an outfit that made it look like I was working out, but I was really just sitting watching them swim, right? And there's a lady, an older lady that was sitting down the way, and I looked around to see who was swimming in the pool, and I look over, and this older lady catches my eye, and she waves at me, and I wave back, and I thought, man, I don't recognize this lady. And so I sat there and I watched my kids a little bit. And then as my kids were getting out of the pool, I get out of the pool with my kids and I'm walking. And this lady meets me and she finds me and she says, are you the pastor at Crossroads Church? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, I just want to tell you. And then she paused and she started to tear up. She said, my daughter is alive because of your church. And she told me a story about in the last few months how her daughter had had a relationship of years that had declined and disappeared, that she had lost a job, that she had a car that wasn't functioning properly, and that there were lots of things in her world that everything seemed to fall apart, and it was in the season of all of her life falling apart, and it still seems to be falling apart, that somehow somebody from our church said to this lady, please join me at Crossroads Community Church South Campus. That is one of the 57,000 people. And they matter to him. And that person matters to us. So who's your one? That's the question. Who's your one? I'm going to ask you to do something that I don't normally ask you to do. Some of you take notes, some of you don't. I'm fine with that. But grab a pencil and the seat back in front of you and write the name of your one person down. If we could do an all skate, I want this for every one of you. If you are a believer in Christ, write a name down. So grab a piece of paper, grab your bulletin, your program, whatever it is, right now, grab a pencil or a pen from somebody and write down your one person. Please do this. Because eternity hangs in the balance. Because it's made a difference to hundreds of lives around us. And there are thousands more in our community. And the tendency for some of us is to say, well, what about this church and this church? They should do this. Well, maybe they should. But the point is this: God called us to do this. He is showing us that there are thousands of people in our community who need Christ, and you and I get the very privilege and opportunity to say yes to them and to point them to an eternal future of how much God loves them and to remind them that there is a place of hope, that there is a place in the middle of a world that seems to be falling apart, in a place of a world where people are losing their jobs, in a place of a world where relationships are falling apart, in a place in a world where death seems to happen more times than not, that there is hope, and that hope is found in Jesus Christ, and he's given you and me the privilege and the opportunity to give them hope. Ladies and gentlemen, please, please, I implore you, if you've done nothing with Crossroads Community Church, write a name down right now. Grab a pen, grab a pencil, and write a name down. Because if you can't name it, then it ain't happening. And so many of us, that's where we're at right now. Man, you got the name, and you're like, well, I got it right here, Pastor, but you've never written it down on a piece of paper to make it serious. So do that.